What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Super Otaku Show. As always, I am Bear, joined by my favorite co-hosts, the Shooting Star Sheriff himself, Sharif. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Doing well.
And my Roman half. How you doing, Aaron?
Doing great. How's everybody doing today?
I'm still fighting with my autofocus. I can't move. You guys are going to notice I'm going to have an awkward box that I can't go beyond.
You can't win.
No. Unlike Yami tells us, I literally cannot push past my limits or else the autofocus will lose me.
Mm-hmm.
Sharif got that one and that's all I needed.
He saw me start to smile and I was like, I get it.
Oh man. So anyway, guys, it's been another week. Lots of anime going on. So we're going to start with doing something a little new, something we should probably have done from the beginning, but I'm a silly boy and didn't think of this. And each week we're going to take a minute to mention anything we might have been watching in the anime-averse before we jump into the news. So anybody been watching anything cool, anything fun, anything they want to mention?
Yeah. As Sharif pointed out right before we started the show, Way of the House Husband is on Netflix now, officially. And it's great. I don't know what you thought about the first two episodes. I think I've watched three episodes or four episodes so far. Supposedly, there's only five, which I didn't realize. But there is a confirmed second part, which I could have saved for news, but it's pretty easy. Just throw that out there. I thought it was great. Sharif, what did you think?
I really liked it. I think the biggest thing that I think what really got it for me was the animation style does kind of lean into like the comedy that the show has.
Yeah. So what's weird about the anime is that it's not really animated.
I'm gonna reserve judgment and cut Aaron off before we go into full reviews.
No, this isn't a full review, but it's a quick thing about it. I guess don't go into it expecting to watch an animation. Because it feels a lot more like, I don't know if you've ever seen like fan-made web mangas where they like make the mangas move or like make the characters move inside the manga and then like they'll put sound effects and stuff to accentuate what's happening. That's what it feels like.
I think the most common potentially known thing, Marvel did these a bunch a few years ago, like the Extremist comic and stuff. They did animated comics. It was a thing that that Marvel did for a while. I think some of them went on Netflix for a little bit.
I was gonna say Watchmen, the animated comic.
Watchmen has one.
That was a big one. Yeah. Anyways, it's really fun. The comedy's wonderful. It's so wholesome. It is adorable, and I love it, and I can't wait for part two.
I will speak nothing on it until we do the actual review. Nothing. Yeah, because it's funny. I've actually watched half of the shows that we need to watch. So I've been watching, I guess, a fair amount of anime this week. I watched Joran and Overdress and Way of the House Husband, so I've only got Megalobox, World Ends With You, and Donna Zenon left, but I need to get my Funimation back on to watch all those. So that's why I watched all the Crunchyroll and Netflix stuff first.
Which one is the Demon Snow Princess?
That's Joran. That one's on Crunchyroll.
That's on Crunchyroll.
Yeah.
I watched they posted like a bunch of stuff of it on YouTube. I've watched the opening, like the opening, the OP. Mm-hmm. The OP's an absolute banger.
It's wonderful. It's unique. I'll say
I like
that.
It.
That one is the cool thing, by the way, if anybody doesn't already know, Crunchyroll is free to watch anything from the week before or earlier. Fun fact. Sweet. You just get ads.
Yeah, you have to suffer through the ads, which can be a pain, because it feels like they put a lot more.
Well, Crunchyroll does, but they're mostly for Crunchyroll.
I know, which it's like I'm already here. What about you, Sharif? What have you been watching?
I actually did pick up Megalobox this week. I started watching like the first like two episodes of that. I know it's like not on our list, but you mentioned it Scott, the last one. So I checked it out. I actually do like it. I think the biggest thing is like because I got into shows like I got into Baki mm-hmm. when it was airing, like, the, you know, a few years ago on Netflix. So like fighting some actual martial arts type anime, I was like, really, just something with fighting in it was, I was really jonesing for. And I really do like Megalobox. I think it's an interesting premise. I do like that one a lot.
To be clear, you jumped back and you're starting with the original season.
Yes.
Yeah, that's dope. That makes me excited.
I can't wait to. No, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say one of these days we'll have an episode where we can all talk Megalobox for like an hour.
Yeah, I'll pick that up as well. I gotta say, though, I have mixed feelings on Baki. On the one hand, I love it. On the other hand, I can't watch more than like 3 episodes in a row because it's so absurd. It's just like, it's so much that I just have to like take my time with it. I'm like, I gotta take a break from this. This is nonsense. I like how, because like some people will come up and they'll be like, it's like real martial arts. And the season I watch is probably the most ridiculous arc. And that's the prisoners that mm-hmm. like break out and all come to fight Baki. Or all come to fight each other.
Yep.
In like a seemingly just kind of metaphysical, they all had like a calling in their minds to just go to Japan and all fight. Mm-hmm. It's so absurd. Like, it's just so ridiculously.
Baki is wildly over the top. I love every minute of it. And I think the thing to keep in mind with Baki is that what makes it so fun and weird and impressive is how I always forget the mangaka's name, but he understands the human anatomy so well that he can intelligently over-exaggerate what each character needs. Like Aaron is somebody who like grew up around very fit people. Like, what I'm sure when you see a character with like a weird musculature, like, it normally makes sense for like their martial arts style. It's overblown and impossible.
I was gonna say nobody in the real world looks like the characters in Baki. They'd have like 1% body fat and die.
Yep.
But yeah, like it's very clear he's studies anatomy and like pays attention to like what muscles. It's like the characters look like they just have no skin, basically. Like, that's what all the characters look like. And they're all unique. I like how it's not just one. They all don't look exactly the same, like, muscle-wise. They're all kind of, mm-hmm. like, some are really stocky and short, and others are really tall and lanky. So I do appreciate the kind of diversity. That freaking Baki sex scene, though, is the funniest fucking thing in the world.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Because
he's, like, approaching it like a fighter, and I'm just like...
Random fun fact for you, though, you know, because these two things actually go together very well, is that the daughter of the mangaka of Baki is the creator of Beastars.
Oh, that's so awesome.
So it is a dynasty in the making of unstoppable mangaka.
Seriously, Beastars is absurdly good. Like, it has no business being as good as it is. And I'm really excited for season 2, which should be dropping sometime this month on American Netflix.
Is it?
It's not available. It's not available yet, I don't think. I think it's available in Japan, but I don't think it's currently airing.
I don't think it's this month. It might be next month, because the only other big anime this month is Yasuke.
It probably does take a little while for them to do the dubs, because I experienced Beastars with the dubs the first time, mm-hmm. the first season. I have a curveball this week. But go ahead, Sharif.
No, go ahead. Do your curveball. Throw it at me.
I've been watching Hunter x Hunter.
Good, man. It's about time.
Yeah, no, it's really weird. It's not me that's been watching it. It's my fiance that started watching it.
This is why I like Nina better than you.
I like pay attention from time to time, and then like I really pay attention during some of the bigger fights. I gotta say something about Hunter x Hunter's weird. I think because like it's highly regarded, right? Like, it's one of the best animes of all time.
Yep.
Which is weird to me because like I'm watching it going like, this is maybe it's a product of its time.
Because, so here's the thing.
Second version came out in 2011.
I'm gonna cut you off a little bit. So you said that you haven't been really paying attention, right?
Most of the time I'm paying attention because Nina watches it while she works. So I'm working and like kind of, and we're watching the dub, so like we can do that.
So,
although we ran out of dub episodes, now we have to go watch it on Crunchyroll, and there's no dubs.
I think, like, I don't know about Sharif, but I 100% plan on doing a Hunter x Hunter episode. It is an incredibly intelligent show, and you don't realize it until Greed Island. It's good all the way through. Like, it's always great. It's always a really fun shonen. But when Greed Island hits, that's when you start realizing, oh, this isn't a regular shonen.
This really? I don't know. I finished the Greed Island arc.
Okay, I'm going to point out one quick thing to everybody. Here's one of the biggest things about Hunter x Hunter that's so simple and everybody misses. The very first, like, five chapters does what every good shonen anime does, right? It tells you who our cast is, right? We have Gon, we have Leo Rio, Kurapika, Killua. That's our boys, right? The moment the Hunter exam goes, who are our boys? It's just Gon. And then it's just Killua. And everybody else is gone. Because everybody else has lives and shit to do. And that's how the whole series goes. Because they are all real people who have real things to do. And it's not just like we're all sticking together. So that's that's a big thing. And then, like, looking at the whole series as you start looking at the details, it's... But that's for another time. That's the whole episode. Yeah. That's a big can of worms.
So it's not bad. Like, I don't dislike Hunter x Hunter. I enjoy it. It's just maybe I don't appreciate it the way some people do. I do, like I said, I enjoy it. It's fun. It's a good show. I think one of my biggest things is the whole time I'm watching, I'm just like, hey, have these guys ever done any actual hunting? No hunting. Hunter x Hunter is not about hunters.
No.
It's just a show about me being cool and fighting other people. It's like, hey, don't these guys have a job? Like, oh, yeah, that's what they did all that stuff for, right? I guess not. I mean, like, Gon did that stuff to be a hunter. The others literally tag along for their own purposes.
Yep.
Like, none of them seem to have any interest in actually being a hunter. Like, none of the important characters actually want to be a hunter.
Well, I think that's another thing is you gotta remember that, like, the term hunter is kind of nebulous. Like, it means that you hunt something. It doesn't need to be a person. It basically means that you are somebody who has a goal or objective or a passion that you're following. Like, Gon's dad is an archaeologist.
Yeah, it just seems weird because it's like, the front half of the show is like they're taking these exams and doing all this stuff to get the hunter license, and then, like, after that it becomes this arc where they're like, part of it's like a mafia story, and then, like, it's a revenge tale, and then it becomes like, kind of, you know, the big top 10 boss fight kind of things, and then it becomes a card game RPG island, and you're like, wait, what? They're in a video game now?
Yep.
What is happening?
It's great.
It's tonally weird because it feels like, or maybe not tonally, maybe it's like atmospherically weird because it just feels like it's all over the place. It wants to be everything.
Well, it does whatever
it
wants.
I want to be a card game anime. I want to be a fight anime. I want to be a superpower boy anime. It feels very much all over the place.
But we can save, I think, for more of a deep dive into that for later.
Definitely. Hunter x Hunter would deserve its own, but we have to actually finish it. By the way, is Hunter x Hunter finished?
No, because Togashiro's a very sick and not good at taking care of himself human being. And Hunter x Hunter has been on hiatus for a long time.
he just hit a burnout phase.
Oh, no. Togashiro has been making anime or manga since, like, the 80s or early 90s, and he is literally sick. He gets physically and, like, mentally ill and then cannot make things. He hasn't made anything in almost 3 years, I think. But he is not canceled. Hunter x Hunter is allowed to, whenever it wants to, put a chapter in Shonen Jump. It's the weirdest thing. If at any point Togashiro calls them and is like, I made a chapter this month, they would put it in.
Hey, I finally wrote something. They're like, yes, give it to us.
Yeah, his body's burning out. Yeah,
that's what I've been watching, oddly enough. Nice. I mean, other than Way of the House Husband, which I just turn on from time to time because it's fun.
Sharif, you got anything else cool you were checking out or anything you were watching this week?
Outside of Megalobox, no. Are we diving into the news right now?
I think we're about to jump into the news, so if you want to start it up, go for it.
All right. So actually, it's funny because one of the anime that we are watching, The World Ends With You, had a little bit of a scandalous thing that happened even before the anime even premiered.
I saw this. This is neat.
Yeah. So for you guys that don't know, I actually have the link for the article here from comicbook.com. But The World Ends With You was going to have an original song for the show. But you know how all Japanese anime do. They get a band. The band does a song for the opening. The band was called Isla or Ila. I don't speak Japanese, so I might be butchering it. I'm sorry. But the drummer from that band had just recently gotten like arrested for something that they have not released to the press yet. Mm-hmm. But because of what was going on with the band, what they did was they actually had pulled their song as the official opening, and they actually did a remix of one of the songs from the original OST of The World Ends With You, which is Calling. Which Calling is a really good song, by the way.
That whole like soundtrack for that game is a bop.
Yeah. So you know. So no, no. Yeah.
No, go ahead. I want to finish this piece of news, but if we're on the subject of music, I got something for the next piece.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. So I guess it just really brings up, like, because the original song was called Teenage City Riot, which I didn't get to hear the song yet. Well, the song got replaced, I think, even before the first episode. Yeah. So you would never hear it. So I kind of want to hear the original song. But the reason I bring this up is, this isn't the first time where like scandals affect anime openings. A year ago, I was watching Yu-Gi-Oh! Vrains, which was at the time the most latest Yu-Gi-Oh! series, and the final ending was done by a band, and the band had a little bit of controversy because the official music video for the ending, they were like doing some really weird stuff, and they, first off, the song's like 5 minutes. But like the like it's an all female band, and like they were covered in like something that was supposed to look like bodily fluids, and it caused like a mass hysteria. But the song ended up, it didn't get like pulled from the anime, but like it caused a lot of controversy. So I guess my question was, how do you guys feel about like when like stuff happens to like artists or whatever, and it affects like their work on projects, like how's that?
So, I always think it's weird when they like retroactively like take things out, because especially something like this where we don't know that the band as a whole was like doing bad. Like this probably hurts that whole like creative group. Like if the drummer did something terrible, like good, he got arrested, he's going away. But this sucks that this whole group had a chance to maybe like really be spotlighted in a big show. There's a big break potentially for them, and it gets taken away. But what I was going to say is that from the research I've done, actually after a change in Yakuza 7, or Yakuza Like a Dragon, apparently it's a big cultural thing in Japan. If anybody has a criminal event pop up around them of any kind, they are normally kind of like stricken from it however they can. In Yakuza Like a Dragon, it was one of the main antagonists of the game. His entire likeness was removed because the actor who did the mocap and the voice was arrested for something. And I think he was arrested for like drug use, which something in America, like that's like shame.
That's part of the game, baby.
So
you're a mocap artist, you're snorting mountains of cocaine.
Exactly. That's how you keep your energy up. So anyway, it's weird because it's a big cultural disconnect, I guess. Like in the West, we have a much higher tolerance for like Hollywood shenanigans like that. So I don't have a problem with them doing it. I'm more sad that the band kind of suffered when it's like a group and one person does wrong. Like the Sharif probably knows about this. There was the one manga that was really popular last year, and the one author ended up being a giant fucking creep. He was hitting on, like, teenage girls. Yeah. And now, like, the artist, who was just the guy who drew it, and he was, like, really brought a lot of life to the series, can't do it anymore. Like, this project he's working on for years, like, he loses his livelihood because, sadly, his partner, creative partner, was a creep. And it, like, that sucks.
Yeah, and... come to America. We'll elect him governor or something.
Oh, man.
Yeah, maybe we should adopt a more strict policy on people fucking around in creative spaces. Maybe then we'll finally see some justice. It is sad. I do understand that, you can't always... You don't always hold responsibility for your teammates in what they do in their personal lives. Yeah. And that might have something to do more culturally with their idea of taking responsibility for others in their immediate spaces, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, it sucks, but it's the nature of the beast. It would be cool to listen to the song still if it exists, if it's a bomb.
I believe it is on YouTube. I think the original article I found, which I think is the comic book one, I believe said that it was on YouTube somewhere. So we might be able to check it out after stream.
Sweet. So speaking of music, since we're talking about music, this isn't really new so much as a thing that just happened. So
that's one news.
Yeah. Well, more like it's not really like a piece of news, because it's not any kind of dive into what's currently happening. It's just more of like, oh, they finally released a song that I liked and they didn't have it on Spotify before. So Attack on Titan OST had this one really awesome track that they used for the season 4 trailer, and in the show also. And they finally released it on Spotify with its name, Ashes on the Fire is what it's called. It is so good. Even Scott, you don't like Attack on Titan, but even you got to admit that the OST is pretty fantastic.
Normally Attack on Titan has quite a few bops. Like, I actually have Attack on Titan, music and covers saved on my Spotify, because they do a damn good job with it.
They're so, the band that does the openings, because it's, the same band for a lot of the openings, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the same band for all of them. But the band that does the openings is amazing. And strangely, it somehow manages to, fit the anime really well, because the band does, parts in German.
Weird.
So it's, a Japanese band, but they also have, a German-speaking member, so mm-hmm. They have parts that are in German, and it's this is really fitting. Almost fits exactly the kind of environment they're trying to create.
Mm-hmm.
But the mm-hmm. OST, the actual the soundtrack itself, the score, which who does the score? Kota Yamamoto, I believe is his name. He does just some amazing work. Obviously, Attack on Titan, just that song, the theme song, is pretty great. There's also some just a lot of really good tracks, but Ashes on the Fire is, it's special. It's so good.
I'll have to give it a listen.
Yeah, if you have not heard that, even if you've watched the trailer for season 4, you know which song I'm talking about. It's all the hype. It's if you wanted to if you were okay, this is the final season, air quotes up, we gotta create the most hype, this is it, this is the song you need, here you go.
Definitely.
They could have just played that and I would have watched the season. They wouldn't have to show
just song.
It'd be for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they didn't show the producers any footage, they just showed
the audio
file. If they just did that for Attack on Titan, it was just a black screen, but they played the song, I'd be like, yeah, I'm watching it. I don't care what it looks like.
Oh, that's great. So, we got a few more stories. I'm going to kind of move through these a little quickly. Number one is that I'm going to try and find the original article. For some reason, this article does not want me to be able to pull it up ever. But if anybody knows it, the manga and GoGo 13 has been going on for 299 tankobon. That is volumes. That's fucking big-ass thick manga books. It is now the oldest manga that is still published, with 53 years under its belt. Wow. Takao Saito has been the illustrator, author, and mangaka all the way around. Since then, he has taken, like, one hiatus, and it was last year due to COVID, just because he physically could not get to the place where he did his work.
What is this manga?
It is Golgo 13. If anybody doesn't know, it is a manga about a hitman that goes by Golgo, and he is primarily a sniper who snipes people with a custom M16. So yeah, man, it's one of the longest running shows. It's been going on for so long. Like, it's wild. Since 1968, starting in Big Comic. Wow. That is just an impressive run.
How has a manga like this been going on for so long, and I don't feel like I've ever actually seen it?
I feel like it's not super huge in the West. Like, it's got a small following, but I mean, it's had live-action films, an OVA, a 50-episode anime, and it's got an anime movie, and it has video games. Like, it's got a little bit of everything. It's pretty cool, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Our next one, I've got to open the link first, is... anybody who grew up in, like, the 80s is probably a much bigger fan and knows much more about this than any of the three of us. Maybe Sharif, because I know he likes them big robots. But after decades of conflict, and of course this one is from a Kotaku by Luke Plunkett. You can go check him out and give the article a read. It's got a lot more detail than I'm going to give you. But Macross is finally coming west. So if anybody doesn't know, in the 80s, we got Macross as not Macross, but as Robotech. It's like its own anime, its own series, but it uses all the mechs and designs from Macross, which are their transforming jet planes. And for years, since I think like 89 or 90, since 1995, I want to say, it's been stuck in like development hell where companies have tried to make live-action movies, different adaptations, more releases with actual Macross stuff, and they can't because of the way the two parent companies have been fighting and disagreeing over who actually has the rights. And this week, the company that had the rights to publish Robotech stuff in the West, I believe it's Harmony Gold, finally won the lawsuit. And so now they can bring Macross and Robotech stuff in for the first time in like 20-something years. So, and anybody who's an old-school mecha fan, you might be getting some cool stuff in the near future.
Get that merch out. Yeah, that's crazy. Licensing Limbo is probably like the worst thing that can happen to any IP, because like it literally, because of licensing is literally why like certain things can't happen. I've definitely have learned that through like playing like a whole bunch of like gacha games and stuff like that, which is funnily enough. But like a lot of licensing is the worst, because that was the whole thing with Scott Pilgrim versus the World too.
Yeah,
stuck in like licensing hell. That stuff sucks.
It does.
Yeah, copyright and licensing and all that is a nightmare to navigate. It's genuinely, it hinders creativity. We hate it. But you know, I guess it has its purpose. I'm not gonna like bring that up. That's a topic for another day.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's an annoying evil.
Get me started on it.
Yeah, this is one of those bad episodes because it's a fundamental disagreement between Aaron and I. But anyway, next up is just a fun new release date for Sharif and I. Neo: The World Ends With You has an unexpectedly close by release date of July 27th for PS4 and Switch. This is coming from literally everywhere that reports on video games on the internet, even us now, because that's some hype-ass news. I watched the trailer. Yes. Sharif, did you?
Yes.
How you feeling?
I'm feeling super, super pumped up. I mean, for anyone who doesn't know, The World Ends With You is literally one of my favorite video games of all time. It's in my top five. I'm super excited. I've already drawn parallels between like the main character of this new game and then like Neku. Mm-hmm. Like they both wear the brand Jupiter of the Monkey. I don't know if that
that's cool,
but I was like, that's sick. But I'm super excited for it. I'm hoping it's gonna be good. I know that they've been teasing this game for years and years and years. So hopefully it's one of those things I'm going to go on with like a fresh slate, kind of like how I did with Kingdom Hearts, because I don't want to have like that Kingdom Hearts 3 effect where it was like you're not going to be able to live up to like like 20 years worth of hype. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, maybe if they had spent that time focusing on like telling a good story instead of Unreal Engine, I would have taken a shitty looking game that did a better job of telling the story than what we got. I would have gladly. I don't want to see Hercules in full 3D rendered with awesome texture maps. I don't give a shit. But God help me, what have you done? Why don't they understand their own properties?
I mean, you can at least mod it on PC now.
There it is. That's the silver lining. As far as Neo goes, though, I think it looks cool. I'm looking forward to it. Definitely being able to play with the controller, not in my hand, like an awkward, draggy tap-tap game will be great. The World Ends With You is a brilliant game made for a brilliant console and made the best use out of that console, but porting it anywhere else is not a fun time. So, I'm super excited to have a more traditional game. Also, the ending of that trailer, man. I'm going to spoil this for anybody who isn't watching the trailer, so skip, like, 45 seconds. But at the end, when, like, weird, cloaked up, like, Dark Neku shows up, and they're all just, like, talking in his name in, like, hushed tones, and I'm just like, shit's going down.
Yeah, I was real hyped. It's going down.
I don't know what happened.
Why does that also just remind me of Kingdom Hearts? You know how at the end of, like, every game they do the dark hooded figure?
They're both Tetsuya Nomura. It's the same creator.
Somebody has to stop him. He can't keep doing this.
Yeah, this is why in Dream Drop Distance, the World Ends With You characters are in that game. they're a crossover reference.
It's like, fool me once, shame on you. I'll do the George W. Bush line. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice. Well, you ain't gonna fool me twice.
So anyway, our final piece of news, at least for me, this is in the ever-continuing saga of us chasing this anime because it's impossible to fucking get, is Eden Zero is coming west this fall in English. So that's when we'll put it on the list. I don't even know if we're going to make it a pick from one of us. I think we might have to just put it on as an additional pick, just so we defeat this anime and review it. Because it just escapes us out into ether.
It's the WWE section where all the contestants are fighting and then the lights go dim and it's like, what is this? Who is this coming in from the corner? It's Eden Zero!
Now, my more serious question, though, is when do I get Shaman King?
You don't.
What? Shaman King.
Yeah, because you kind of have to, like, find, like, someone who's subbing it, and like, you know,
yeah, find it. So find it. Like, because Shaman King is another Netflix exclusive anime, but the difference is that I think Eden Zero might only have a 13 or 26 episode order, and Shaman King is a full 52, so that could be why we might be getting Shaman King more broken up or in bigger chunks. So who knows? We'll see. Anyway, with that, I think that's all the news, unless anybody else has some last-minute addition.
If you really want some good... since we were talking about good music, the Gundam Iron-Blooded Orphans OST. It's flames. It's so good. It's the same composer that does the music for Your Lie in April, okay? And if you like Your Lie in April's music, yeah, it's really good. She knows how to hit you in the heartstrings. Good stuff. It's my recommendation for the week.
This has been the Shooting Star Corner with Sharif.
Yeah, tune in next week.
And with that, we're gonna move into our main topic. So I just wanted to be known that I'm deeply uncomfortable by whatever this is. All Aaron told us, because peek behind the scenes, like, we don't have to tell each other the topic when we have it. We do need to give Sharif something to make the title of the episode. So it can go in the magic word bubble above Aaron's head. And all he told us was genie in a bottle, and I'm confused and concerned. So, Aaron, what are we talking about this week?
Okay. All right.
I'm going to stop drinking so I don't spit take when what, this is ridiculous.
I'm gonna paint a scenario for you. Okay. Right? Okay.
Oh, God.
A word picture, if you will.
Okay. Now, you... me and Sharif are on a desert island. We wake up on a desert island, okay? Yes, question in the front.
Are there palm trees?
There are palm trees. It's beautiful. It's like the island at the beginning of Kingdom Hearts. Another question in the front.
Are there coconuts?
There are coconuts on this palm tree. But it is completely surrounded by water. Another question in the front. Yes.
Could I name one of the coconuts Walter and make him my new friend?
You can.
Okay.
Does he have googly eyes?
If I can make them.
I'm trying to paint a word. Okay. Now, as we're combing the beach for supplies, anything we can use to survive, one of us stumbles upon an interesting looking lamp. Now, there's some sort of inscription on it, and as we try to rub off the sand and dust to read the inscription, a puff of cloud emerges from the...
I was just making sure we were rubbing the lamp. That's all.
We're rubbing the lamp to try and see the inscription. And as we do, a puff of smoke obscures our view of the entire island, and out of the giant fog comes a giant and terrifying... genie. Yes.
I thought you were going to say Robin Williams.
Robin Williams, Will Smith, or Dan Castellaneta.
Some unholy combination of the three of them. Now.
Oh, God.
Okay. Oh, God.
Robin Smith Williams. But he looks like the Jafar version for some reason. Anyway. Now, the genie tells us, I am the great anime genie. I will give each of you exactly three wishes that must pertain to the elimination of an anime trope of your choosing.
Oh, no.
To be discontinued from every anime henceforth, it shall not be. So, this is our assignment. To entirely eliminate any three tropes, anime tropes of our choosing, forever.
Now, okay.
Now, this is how this will work. Our anime trope elimination will be entirely separate from each other. So imagine if each of our wishes almost created an entirely separate universe from one another, where those anime tropes would be eliminated in one universe, so there's no overlap.
Okay.
You know, like if I eliminate one, that way we can, there'll still be the other tropes out there for those, the anime's joy.
Tempest okay. just says, hit by a car, they need to learn to drive an anime.
No wasting your wishes, Third Tempest.
Is this like a retroactive thing? Like it'll destroy that trope from like anime history, or it's just going forward? We can't.
Just
nobody
going will... forward.
Good. Okay, that's fine. That's all I need to know.
Forward. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. The fine. Animes we love will still be there. You will not accidentally eliminate past animes from the canon. Because honestly, some of mine I might accidentally like eliminate all of Shonen.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, my anime tropes are almost very specific to Shonen because it's what I have the most familiarity with, but it's also like one of my favorite genres of anime. So it just happens to be, and it probably wouldn't eliminate the whole anime, just very specific parts.
Yeah, it's funny because I have only one that has come to mind so far. I'm sure more will come, but I think the first one I have might surprise probably Aaron more than anybody based on who I normally am.
How do we want to do this? Do we want to go person by person, or are we going to go wish by wish for each person?
I was thinking wish by wish round robin, so we'll do circles.
Okay. That's how we will do this. So, Bear, what is thy first wish?
Okay. So, This is a trope that, as a kid, I found it amusing. There are characters that I think it's funny with, but as I get older and become more of a grumpy old man and realize how often it is an unnecessary trope, it's not an additive one. It's generally just a goofy distraction, and it's is that I hate the super perverted character trope. I assume this is one that Aaron also has, but I figured this would catch him off guard.
God damn it.
I found it, like, I think there are characters that it works for, right? People like Master Roshi. It's because Master Roshi's always punished for it. It's the reason why he can't do things like ride his Nimbus. He was also part of a gag manga at the time. You know, he was a gag manga character who's just meant to get beat up. But I don't think it works well in most modern settings. Like, I don't think Mineta in My Hero Academia is fun.
Yeah, it just comes off creepy. Mm-hmm. I agree.
It's gross and creepy and usually just like, and it is usually excused too. Like, not that it's like, because like all of them get punished in a way, right? Like, they'll get slapped or like they'll get caught and then beat up or something. But it's never like addressed past that. It's like, there, he got his comeuppance for it. But it's like, I mean, not really. Like, it gets to go on and continue and like never be fully addressed. Yep. Like, if animes had taken the time to like completely change those characters, like, I would love for Mineta to become a character who like genuinely thinks about his actions in the past and like changes, because like he's a character that's perfectly set up for a good positive change, because like one of his things is that like his power feels pretty useless, and getting to watch him learn to use it in cool and surprising ways is a part of his character growth. I would love if they applied that same logic to his other horrible personality traits.
Yeah, like, it'd be super cool to, like, see, you know, when we inevitably get to that shot at the end, where it's Deku as number one hero, as an adult, and everybody else. It'd be really cool to see, like, that Mineta is actually this, like, super good, like, genuine dude who's kind of realized, like, oh no, I was a jerk back then, we don't do that, don't touch people like that, that's rude.
Like, not if it was, like, just, like, a last-minute thing where he's like, actually, I've changed now. And it's like, well, I didn't see it.
No, I, like, but, like, it, every other character has gotten, like, an arc, and I think he deserves one, too.
Yeah.
Like, well, except for Invisible Girl, because what has she ever done?
That's true. She's eye candy.
That's so annoying. How has she gotten by this far? She's literally done nothing in the whole series.
She's just there to look pretty.
Dude, did you guys not remember she had a training arc to become more invisible? Like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? She had her arc.
Could you not see that one?
I've also been, like, always confused about her arc or her quirk, because it's like, okay, so she's just invisible. Like, not that, like, she turns invisible, but she just is always invisible. Does that, like, maybe this is something that's addressed in the manga later, but, like, can she extend that invisibility to other objects? Like, anything. Anything at all. God damn it.
See, so, my headcanon is that she is always there, she is just never mentioned.
I mean, she is always there. She's somehow always in the background and just never does anything.
She's there.
Yeah,
she's got to do, like, something. Like, I'm watching the new season, and, like, they're going up against Class 1B, and I'm like, okay, she's on a team with other heroes, so, like, they have to address that she's there at some point, right? Like, other heroes that we care about, so, like, they have to use her somehow.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess to pull it a little back towards the first wish is, I generally don't like that. There's only one good example I can really think of that trope, and one absolutely god-awful one that I can think of the trope. The worst, the good one that I can think of is Onizuka from Great Teacher Onizuka. His initial premise, this is super not okay in the US. It's because of laws and cultural differences, makes more sense in Japan. The opening premise of Great Teacher Onizuka is he is this, like, super thug who went to college and has decided to become a teacher. He's like 20 or 22, because he wants to hook up with high school girls. And by time the end of the first episode, he realizes that, like, kids need help because they don't believe in adults. And he, like, he's still kind of, like, a little bit of a pervert. He's still, like, a guy who's 22 and a virgin. But, like, the rest of the series is him being, like, I have to, like, keep them from people who are like me and other adults who are just mean and, like, don't believe in the next generation because they are these, like, rejects because of how, like, the older people are. And it's a weird thing.
I'm just I'm thinking of Dazed and Confused with Matthew McConaughey's character. Like, that's what I love about these high school girls, man. I just keep getting older and they stay the same age.
Yeah, and it, like, it's creepy. And so you, like, it's hard sometimes because, like, I feel like there's a point where, like, you hit, like, mid-20s and you're like, I can no longer even look at, like, anybody below, like, senior in college because they start feeling young, right? But when you're in that, like, college area to, like, a senior in high school, like, you feel closer to being peers. I was, like, 20 dating somebody that was, like, 18 exactly. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Like, that doesn't seem like a super huge difference.
Like, it's still creepy.
It'd be a worse thing, like, in a lot of animes where they have, like, the actual, like, teacher who's much older, like...
Yeah, and that's the thing. There's a guy in the first episode who is... there for the same reason Zo and Izuka and has been doing this, like, hooking up with, like, older girls. And by the end of the episode, Onizuka, like that guy gets arrested and gets kicked out and expelled. And Onizuka's like, that guy's a douchebag. And I'm not, like, we're not going to be that way. And the rest of the series is him becoming the great teacher. And it's very fun. It's very funny. And then I think the worst character is Meliodas from Seven Deadly Sins. You can fight me if you want. That man is horrible and irredeemable and a giant, creepy, creepy man.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I don't care if the main character is his secret wife who just doesn't remember. She doesn't know what's going on. She's also very sheltered and dumb. You can't do that to people. It's creepy.
It hurts. It hurts so much.
Unless it's like, Aaron. I'm allowed to do it to Aaron. It's fine. He likes it.
This bear's allowed to objectify me on the channel. I'm wearing my skirt just for him off screen.
I have my own special B cam.
Oh, okay. So I guess, like, Scott's actually eliminates one of mine because that was one of mine.
But we have different worlds.
But yeah, like, it's different universes. So, like I would still say that is exactly mine because I also hate that trope. So let's go to Sharif. What is thou first wish?
I'm gonna say it. I'm tired of useless girls in shonen anime. When I say useless, I mean just horribly written.
Yeah.
Prime example, just about every female in Naruto.
I was gonna say all of them.
It doesn't come from a place of like, oh, I just hate these characters, right? It comes from like when I actually sit down and like look at and like really watch these shows and the older I've gotten. Sakura literally asks a man to fix everything for her. She literally asks Naruto, please save Sasuke. Boy, we get Shippuden. Literally, that's like what, you know. And even like Hinata, which I mean, Hinata is a character that I like a lot more than Sakura, you know, for reasons. But well, first off, Sakura is a tsundere. I hate tsunderes, but that's a whole other topic. But
the tsundere gods are angry. They're roaring in the background of my stream.
Exactly. But all of Hinata's motivation comes just from loving Naruto, which I'm not saying love is a bad reason or is a bad motivator, but it shouldn't be your only motivator. Like, Hinata doesn't do anything for herself.
I will say her original, like, one of her original motivations was beyond Naruto when she was fighting Neji specifically. Like, because she was trying to prove herself, but, like,
once that's Hinata. That's Hinata. Not Sakura.
That's what I said. No, I thought we were talking about Hinata.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought you said Sakura. Okay.
No, we moved on from Sakura to Hinata. We're on Hinata now. Hinata did have some motivations outside of Naruto, but, like, past, like, her first initial fight with Neji, it kind of, like, dissipates. Yeah. And then she's accepted.
And
And like, well, okay, what were you gonna say?
I was just gonna say like, so the like Hinata's love for Naruto is based on her wanting to be like him. So it's a little more relatable, right? She wants to be somebody that's bold, somebody yeah. that's outspoken, somebody that fights for herself. Whereas Sakura loves Sasuke because he's hot. And then she continues, she loves Naruto because he's, like, the cool guy. Like, he's the thing right now, right? Like, it's whoever's the coolest yeah. guy in town right now is yeah. who she's, like,
but ultimately, over. Neither of them matter.
No.
They get brushed aside pretty quick.
Like, but, like, here's the thing with Sakura, though, too, right? Because even after the time skip, right, Sakura's like, okay, I'm gonna go train with Tsunade. And she gets like the super strength and stuff, right? So so from the beginning of Shippuden, you think that she's going to be more important. She's going to play more role. Not to mention she is a healer, right? Mm-hmm. So at the top, but then later in the series, what happens? Literally everybody who isn't Sakura becomes a healer. So now they just trained a whole team of healers. So like the one thing that made Sakura kind of relevant, everyone else in the village learns how to do anyway. So it's one of those things that, like, in Shonen, it starts to bother me. And it's even present in My Hero with a few of their female characters. And it's like, you have some good, and you have good characters. Like, you have characters like Jiro, who has, like, that music, where she's got, like, her music thing that she enjoys or whatever. I'm like, I would love to see more depth in Shonen. I mean, I understand it's for young boys, but I feel like we're in a point now where we've kind of transcended this whole like shonen shoujo thing where we have to cater to a specific audience.
Yeah, because there's so much overlap. That seems like, you know, like they're like, it feels like, because like shoujo feels like a very vague, shoujo and shonen feel like very vague descriptors for a set of specific genres that happen to appeal more to certain genders. But even then, like, we've gotten to a point where everybody just kind of loves everything around that age group. So like, there are romance animes. Like, being a romance anime doesn't just make it a shoujo anymore. Like, lots of people watch those now. So I agree with you that I do feel like,
yeah, I think nowadays, like, shonen and shoujo tends to be more of like an aesthetic style, and then a little bit of like the premise. Like, shoujo has a very specific art style that it tends to lean into. Shonen has its own as well.
And a collection of tropes, generally, right? Like, which is what we're talking about. Like, these collections, like, they just kind of collect a group of tropes that feel familiar to, like, a bunch of animes. Like, and
like Nisekoi.
Like, boys like these, girls like these, I guess.
Yeah. Like, Nisekoi is a pretty solid, like, rom-com. Like, it's like, it's a big love triangle is, like, the running gag of the whole show. But it's technically a shonen. It's because the art style and the style of trope they use throughout it.
Yeah.
Got you. Yeah. But yeah, I want better women.
I think My Hero is paving a nice way in terms of, like, specifically what we would consider shonen animes now for female characters. Like, I do love that they each have their own very individual motivations that aren't related. Like, it almost kind of feels like a cop-out that, what's her name? Floating Girl.
Ochako.
Yeah, it almost feels like a cop out that she even likes Deku. Like, of course she likes Deku. Who doesn't like Deku? He's an adorable.
But that's the thing. They both kind of like each other at the very beginning, and then like she just wants to like keep up with her and Ishida, because like those were like the trio at the beginning. They were the buddies, and she's just like, I'm gonna be as good as them, except for she's gonna be a rescuer, which is cool because they're each gonna be a different type of hero, and I think that's dope.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I like it.
That is dope.
I'm glad that her admiration for Deku is kind of more of a background piece to her wanting to be just better as a hero. Because their motivations basically boil down to, I want to be a hero, right? Yeah. That's like every one of their motivations, but just
different reasons
in some way. Yeah.
She wants to help her parents have a nice, easy life when they retire.
Also, there's a lot more interesting female characters, I would say, in My Hero than some of the other shonens. Like, interesting both in power set and like their attitude in general, like persona.
The one I was gonna
different
mention, the anime I was gonna mention, I think only Sharif really might have an experience with this one, is Black Clover. Every one of the female characters, even the ones that do have like crushes or like a male character and vice versa, that's not their motivation. Noelle likes Asta and has a crush on him, but he has nothing to do with her motivations of being a magic knight. all of her motivation is to prove herself to her family, to become as strong as her mother, to then avenge her mom. She has genuine, like, these are all things that are shown in, like, protagonists would have. Like, she was the weakest in the family. Mm-hmm. Her powers are wonk and, like, don't really work. We find out she actually has stupid amounts of power, and that's why it doesn't work, is because she's so strong. Like, that's, like, some Naruto-level shit right there. And that's her motivation, like, as a character. And most of the characters throughout all of Black Clover have something like that. And even the, like, one-shot characters all have unique dreams. Like, the brother and sister who just want to go perform music. They're both really powerful mages, but they just want to be performers on land, but they have other stuff to do.
Third Tempest actually brought up a really good one that I was about to say. Rukia, but not just Rukia, but, all of Bleach. All of Bleach is just, in fact, this is, it doesn't even just apply to women character in Bleach, but almost every character that is not Ichigo. They're all useless. They, like, feel like they're gonna get powerful and interesting just like Ichigo, and they just... fucking Chad, like, you have this, like, these really interesting characters that you just were like, and you just threw this. He's like, I'm just gonna throw this one away.
Yeah.
That goes right Bleach, in the trash bin.
Bleach was really weird because for Bleach to have such a huge and diverse cast, like, it did get to the point where it just became the Ichigo show.
It just gave up.
Because I remember too, because they literally wrote Chad, which Chad is probably one of my other, like, favorite characters in Bleach. They literally wrote his power cap into the, like, manga or into the series, where it was during the Fullbringer arc, and Chad was like, I need to find a way to get stronger. And literally one of the main villains, like, was like, your power's tapped out, bro. You can't get no stronger. And I was like, what, in a shonen? Are you kidding me? It's the, like, dude, like, Bleach was the one of the worst offenders of having a huge cast, and then they were just like, forget them.
Fuck these motherfuckers. Ugh. Also, but, like, I think Bleach really highlights the one you brought up, though, like, useless female characters, because, like, even Chad is somehow a degree, like, more interesting than orange hair girl that I can't remember her name. Like, she gets a power, and you're thinking, like, oh, cool, she's gonna, like, try and, like, hang out with Ichigo. And obviously, none of them are supposed to be on Ichigo's level.
The most busted power, and then they immediately nerf it to hell and make it irrelevant.
Oh my god! Like, why? Why did you do this? Like, we want to get to know her, but, like, her entire motivation was bad from the beginning. Like, they didn't give her a reason, like... Part of the reason I think they nerfed her power was because they didn't actually know why she would be there besides Ichigo. It's like, why does she fight? It's because Ichigo is there and she wants to protect Ichigo.
Well, and that's, like, the thing. Like, season two, she is the MacGuffin, and she has this, like, crazy power, and then they don't utilize her anything beyond she is new MacGuffin.
I am the I have become the MacGuffin.
I am MacGuffin.
Which is actually a trope all on its own, where the female is the MacGuffin.
Yeah, your princess is in another castle.
That's an annoying trope. But anyways, or Men in Black 2.
So anyway, I guess we should move to our next one. Aaron, what is your second one, technically?
Okay. Brace yourselves. I'm about to destroy shonen anime forever.
Sunglasses. Key powers.
I do not want there to be an absent father who then turns out to actually be a powerful badass. I'm fucking tired of that shit. Have the balls to just let them be dead, or just have a full family. It's okay. Like, I kind of don't know where... This is an interesting one, because I don't know culturally where this trope comes from. Because it doesn't seem to have, like, a basis in anything. But, like, it's always, like, the character doesn't have a dad in the picture. Either because they, like, sacrificed themselves, or they just, like, went off and, like, became a powerful badass and didn't want their, like, son to know about it. Or, in the case of My Hero, like, finally, they have the balls to just let that dude be dead and, like, never bring him up again. I'm fine with that.
Here's the crazy thing. It extends past anime. Digimon, like, most of the characters don't have a dad. Pokemon, only one generation has a father.
Yeah, what is going on?
Like,
what,
dads Japan, are bad.
Are you okay? They've got daddy issues in Japan. But, like, it's almost like they want to retcon the daddy issues by being like, actually, my dad was off being an entirely, totally cool badass. he was secretly a Soul Reaper the whole time. Bleach. Bleach.
To give it credit, Pokemon doesn't do that. Your dad's a gym leader, and he's only the fourth one, and you crush him like the scrub he is, so.
Wait, his dad's a gym leader?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody could be a gym leader, like, just fucking, like, farm girl, random guy whose grandpa retired, Brock who just needs to, like, watch his, like, 82 siblings, Misty, because her sisters who are actually good at Pokemon happen to be out shopping.
Rude.
He's right. No, he's right. He's right.
But yeah, no, I very much dislike the trope. I guess because it's just so prevalent, and it's like, I mean... can we just have, good fathers for once?
Yeah.
Also, maybe more focus on the like, wives who had to look after the protagonist for their entire lives. I don't know, like, maybe say something interesting about having a single mother raise a child.
Another thing with My Hero, I do love that you get to watch, like, Deku's mom become, like, little pudgy lady who's just trying her best pudgy. With, like, that's her crazy hero want-to-be son who can't be one.
Yes.
And also, she's the only anime mom that, like, actually cares about her son dying.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna say, when it comes to anime moms, Mama Midoriya is one of the best. Mm-hmm.
Followed by Yusuke's mom in Yu Hakusho. She gets day drunk and he takes care of her.
Yes. I was gonna say I always thought my head canon would as far as like why dads are always gone. Because I think even Deku says his dad is away on business trips is because of the economy of just the way Japan is, because Japan is a very work-oriented country. And a lot of the guys work a lot. Like, I know friends that, like, have went to Japan on, like, work visas or whatever, like, to teach, like, English or something like that. And you go and you teach over there English for a few years or whatever, and then you know, and then once your work visa expires, you either live there or you try and get another visa or you try and work through like, another company. I hear it's really, really cutthroat to, like, try and live in Japan. So I always thought that's kind of where that came from, but like it's always dads and never like the moms or anything. So it's right. Always, it's weird. It's a weird trope. It really is a weird.
Japan has pretty strict gender roles, and you could be right. It could be based on the fact that more often than not, the dad is off at work for extended long periods of times, and this is possibly a way of kind of like fictionalizing that experience. Both in having them just absent and even in, like, making them be awesome, cool dudes later on because, like, oh, actually, he was a hero the entire time because he was out working for us. That could be true. And, like, in Japan, you're right, it's very work-centric to a very dangerous degree where oftentimes they have a word for it. Like, Japan has its own word for working yourself to death because it's such a common... issue in Japan where they work so hard they just die, like from exhaustion and just the weight of it all. That's actually an interesting point that I hadn't considered before. But that's my second trope that I'd like to get rid of. I'd like to focus a little more on having healthy relationships in my anime.
Yeah. All right, Scott, you're up.
All right, so this is taking me a lot because I'm real bad at this because I like a lot of. I'm a big fan of tropes because I love tropes and then twisting them into something different. That's a thing I like to do. I like starting with a lot of character archetypes when I make things and then bucking the trend in a different direction. It's a personal favorite of mine. My next one, though, is I want to get rid of the single emotion-having protagonist. There's normally two variants at the start of any show.
Mm-hmm.
Screaming, that's Asta and Naruto, or crying, that's Deku. There are two types of shonen protagonist. There's a third one. The third one is zero emotion. I give no fucks. That's Ichigo. Doesn't care about anything, hates the world, leave me alone. These are like the three archetypes, and you get one. It's your Pokemon starters, right? Does your protagonist scream? Do they hate the world, or do they cry? What do you got? And then you go, and then you make your show. And mm-hmm. and maybe in 30 episodes, they get a different emotion. We'll see. I think, like, sometimes, like, those characters, like, I get why. It's because they're simple, relatable, kind of common character archetypes. But they're normally irritating, and I think a lot of the times, especially as you get, like, older and you watch those shows, they drive you out. Like, the amount of people I've heard say, even when they read, like, Black Clover, leave it because they hate Asta. Because all Asta does is scream. Especially his voice actor in the English dub is atrocious.
Oh, in the anime.
Because he screams constantly in the first 10 episodes. And it, like, somewhere halfway through Funimation, that whoever's directing realized that they should stop doing that. But it really ruins a lot of tropes, and I think, like, the characters that only cry for too long, I'm trying to think of an example of one. As I know, like, Deku cries a lot, but he doesn't shut down. Do you have an idea, Sharif, of somebody?
I was gonna say, it's funny because I'm still working on it, but he's very similar to Suna in some ways like that. But Suna is fundamentally different from Deku, because Deku is a crybaby because it's weird, but there's like a fundamental difference. The thing is that Suna is put in a world that he is completely unknown of, whereas Deku has lived his entire life aware of the world that he lives in. So the reasons why their crybabies are completely different. Spoiler alert. I'm doing a in-depth character analysis for Suna later. But like with Suna, I understand his crybabiness because he's thrust into a world that he does not know, a world of mafias. Mm-hmm. Whereas Deku is aware of the world that he's in. He's just powerless in the beginning. So you know, yeah, it is what it is. But the whole meek hero is definitely become more of a thing. It's definitely starting to caught waves and trends. Yep.
And like I don't mind the hero being like meek or mild or like a little like on the softer side. And I like generally I think Deku is a decent example of a protagonist. I think he cries a bit, but he normally is trying and he does his best.
So happy he's not crying anymore though.
Yes. but I don't like when that stays too long. Like Asta basically takes, like, Asta's still loud, even as a character, like, 100 chapters later, but it takes until, like, the, like, 50 or 60 chapters for him to normalize, and, like, he's loud because he's a loud person and not because he's screaming to be heard. Same way, like, Naruto takes until Naruto's a little quicker, because Naruto takes until the end of the Zabuza fight, right, to stop yelling. Because that's the moment where he sees the world for what it is. And what the ninja world is versus what he wants it to be. And it can be a little... Sometimes it gets long on the tooth. Sometimes it really pulls you out. I it's going to bother me. Like, I wish I had a little heads up, because I would have done research and found which show it is. Because there is one, at least, where the character is such a crybaby, and it takes so long. I mean... Here's an example. Tokyo Ghoul. Tokyo Ghoul is a show that so many people love. I can't get past it. I read the first 10 chapters, and the main character is such a sad sack, and I get that he's in a bad situation, but he's the saddest panda with no desire to fix his problem.
The worst part is that the change is... I watched Tokyo Ghoul up until the major character shift in the protagonist, which is, all right, I guess spoilers for Tokyo Ghoul, which is kind of an old anime, so I'm not too worried about it. But basically he gets tortured for like a week, just straight up. Like he's taken by this guy and tortured for a solid week, just getting his bones broken over and over and over again. And just the worst kind of inhumane, grotesque torture. It's a horrible scene to watch, or scenes, I guess, to watch. Mm-hmm. And the entire time he's having, like, this internal monologue with the ghoul that originally attacked him, which a part of her is in him, I assume, is... I can't remember exactly how that worked. But basically, he has this kind of realization that, like, his character, he can't go on being the way he is. He can't go on being kind and hopeful. He has to, like, basically be the Ichigo character with the I don't care about the world, it's bad.
Yeah,
so he basically becomes like a Sasuke by the end of the episode.
So and so he switches from one dramatic extreme to another.
Well, I don't know, because past that I haven't watched what his character then goes on to be, but from like a completely aesthetic perspective and like how he acts after that scene, it's completely 180.
Tempest points out Eye Shield 21 being similar, and I kind of recall that. I read the first, like, 30 or so chapters. Character, even as he starts getting really good, it's a football, like, American football anime. He still cries at everything. If I had to point out, like, a example or two of protagonists that I like, I love Luffy. Luffy is, because Luffy starts out, and you think he's just going to be, like, a loud, like, Goku, Naruto-type guy. And he is a very loud. He's a very boisterous person. But, like, in the first chapter, in Romance Dawn, you see him be boisterous, you see him be, like, silly, you see him have, like, be dead serious and have convictions. You see him, within the first three chapters, like, straight up, like, sacrifice his, like, own personal well-being to help a friend achieve their dreams. Like, you see him do a whole bunch of different things and have anger and sadness and a range of emotion just a few chapters. And you wouldn't think that when you look at Luffy, because you look at him and you see, like, a goofy, smiling boy who's named Monkey D. Luffy, and he's a rubber man. Like, his first introduction is him pulling his cheek, going, I am a rubber man, and bursting out of a barrel. And yet this character does all these good things in the first, like, three episodes. You see a lot of emotion, and I think another one is, believe it or not, Yusuke Urameshi. Yusuke from Yu Yu Hakusho. You were introduced to him as a thug. He skips school, he doesn't like adults, he doesn't like authority, and by the time the end of the episode, you watch him have a childhood best friend who he clearly cares about him, who cares about him and looks after him. A rival who he does fight with all the time, but he doesn't, like, he's not merciless, he's not mean. He beats up Kuwabara constantly, but, like, he doesn't kill the guy, he's not bloodthirsty, and him sacrifice himself needlessly to save a little kid that wouldn't have died anyway. You see that, like, he is angry. He is a teenager. But he's not just that. You know, he is other things. And I think a lot of other shows, though, like, really wallow and really sit in the one note too long. So that's my thing. That's my number two.
Also it does bother me when they... because, like, the idea is that these characters grow and change. But, like, sometimes they just abandon the traits that made people like them as protagonists. So, like, yeah, Deku's a crybaby, but, like, one of the things people like about him is his unique perspective and knowledge about heroes and
he's a nerd.
Abilities. Yeah, he's a nerd. And I'm glad they haven't quite dropped that yet. But there are some animes where they drop those qualities altogether, and that's kind of boring. Like, I think one of my favorite aspects of Naruto is he's a prankster. He likes playing jokes, he likes pranking, and that gives him a unique insight in how to fight his opponents, because most of them are very uber-serious people who've never pulled a prank in their life. And so they don't like... And, like, one of the aspects of being a ninja is very correlated with being a prankster. And so, like, there are several fights where that plays into it, like, at the beginning. Like, his fight with Neji, his fight with...
Kiba.
Kiba... He does mess around with Kiba.
Yeah.
That
tournament is the last time he does cool tricks, isn't it?
Kinda. There's stuff fights where he does things that correlate with, like, his ability to be a prankster. And, like, one of what was, like, I think in the very last fight of Naruto where they're fighting God.
Because you must always fight God at the end.
They gotta fight God.
You must fight God.
They're doing the kind of callback to getting the bell from
Kakashi,
like their first training exercise. So there's like a bit of a callback to like how they managed to do that or that whole sequence. But, like, yeah, other than that, they completely drop it, and that's really frustrating because, like, it's one of the aspects I really liked about the show because, yeah, him being a prankster matches up really well with his ninja work. So it's like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, okay. I can see that.
Sharif,
what trope I would like to get? This one's about to get a little controversial. I'm sorry, Sword Art Online fans. If you're here, I'm about to say something. Hold on, my dog's tip tapping. Go lay down. You're fine. You're okay. I'm podcasting.
She's all like, right, I cool, have an fine. Opinion on this.
Exactly. All right. One trope that I'm actually getting tired of is bad guys using rape is like a weird thing to get to like the main character. It's notorious in SAO because I'm not even gonna lie. I dropped SAO as soon as Kirito and Asuna became a thing because I was like, this is not what I signed up for. And now I think that was halfway through the first season. And then when you get towards the end, because I just had I was curious, I just had to know. They were like, I just took Asuna because she's really pretty. And like, you use rape is like, it's one of those things, like, it's so weird and it's so uncomfortable. And like, and it's uncomfortable for me watching it. And like, so like, I can only imagine how females must feel about it. But like, but the thing is like, it's Sword Art Online isn't the only offender of it.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, like, that trope transcends anime.
It really does. It's like, to show how mean and nasty I am, I have to rape. And I don't get why, I don't get how. Like, is that really what we're peaking at? Like, you're a bad guy. I get it, but this is how we peak? This is how we show that? Like, it's one of those things that it's gotten to the point now where it's not even funny. Or it's not meant to be funny anyway. But it's not cool. It's just not cool. And I feel like it's such a scapegoat to write a villain out that way.
It's kind of a toss-in. Like, it does feel like it's like a last-minute resort where it's like, I need generic bad guy. Okay, they're creepy rape guy. And it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. It didn't seem like you thought of this character very much. Like, no, I just needed a bad guy, honestly.
I know this is not an anime, but this is a show that I was genuinely looking forward to and was really excited about, and I will not watch it because the character motivation is The Boys. Spoiler for the first episode of The Boys, I know it's a slightly newer show, but I think there are two characters that are set up, and the motivations for both characters, for somebody like me who, for all my grumpiness, am generally a pretty, like, empathetic person, like, churn my stomach, both of these. But one is a character, the bad one, is a character who is set up to be a very powerful, kind of bright-eyed female who wants to be a hero. Like, kind of like pageant mom type deal, but she genuinely believes in it. And she is sexually assaulted before the end of the first episode, and all of who she is, all of, like, you believing in her, all of her standing up for herself and being a tough, cool hero is decimated, and she is put in this really bad, gross position immediately. Like, they take away all her agency and power, and like, you're just like, this sucks. And I didn't like that. I was like, this feels gross and bad. Like, I don't hate him being a creep and coming onto her like that. I hate her giving in and like it happening and nobody else cares. Everybody's like, that happened, sucks to suck, fuck you. The whole situation ended up feeling horrible.
Yeah. And then I will say, go ahead. No, go finish your thought on that. Sorry.
No, you go ahead, because the other one is me. I'm gonna tell like the other character. Because the other character watches a hero, literally, like, he's a speedster, he's basically the Flash, run through his girlfriend and explode her. And that, like, hurts, and that hits, because that, in a better way, shows how shitty heroes are. Because he, like, you watch what happens to this guy throughout the rest of it, and how, like, they try and cover up what this man did, and how they blame this guy and his like girlfriend for her death caused by another person. And I think that was a much better and more poignant situation.
For that one, I will say, so like, The Boys is all about power, power structures,
corporation, and power corrupting, yes,
capitalism, all of it. There's tons of interesting themes to explore. One thing I will say about the sexual assault scene is I like how it's framed. So remember how we were talking about Watchmen and like the build up to the rape scene in Watchmen? But the build up to the rape scene in the way it's like literally how it's shot. I'm not talking about just like
The whole thing is like he's creepy. It's like very like
it's shot in a way that both makes him like the whole situation feels gross, but also how ridiculous and strange the whole thing is. And I feel like that does put you in her perspective a bit because, the first shot you see of him is, like, he's just got his pants down in the middle of the room, like, getting himself hard. And you're like, what the fuck? Like, and that's how these people come off. Like, it doesn't sexualize her. It doesn't make her out to
be, it victimizes her, which is very good.
Yeah.
It doesn't victim blame. Yeah. That's the difference. It's like, I like how she is not made to be like, well, you put yourself in this position. And also you're very sexy and we're gonna ogle you for a bit before we like get to the point where we feel bad.
Like, I don't think it's a poorly done, like, and I get that that's the point of the boys.
I will say the second season, like, if you were to get to the second season, and the first season does a good job of it too, but like the second season does such a good job of taking his character and putting it in the exact, so like how you were saying how like the company tries to frame the girl who dies in the very first scene for it being her fault, and how corporate structures will do that thing. They do the same to him, and like it's so perfectly on the nose. Like,
yeah, and that's the thing.
He's putting like a rehabilitation program with like this culty angle, and like they're trying to rebrand his image, but he's like kicked out of the team. Like, they keep him in the shadows for a while. Like, no, like you'll get back. We gotta rebuild you up though. Like, we can't, you know, you're out of the team for now because like that's unforgivable, and then we're gonna bring you back in later. And like he having this whole that whole arc for him is so, I will say the second season it does everything better. The first season's okay. The second season's like, this is peak what the show is about. Anyways, but like that's getting off topic a bit. But I feel like this whole cynical superhero genre is kind of getting old for me in general.
I agree.
I'm kind of done with it. Like, I just started watching Invincible on Amazon.
So good.
Because I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was going in. And I kind of like, I figured when they started like cussing in the first episode, I was like, oh, this is going to be a cynical.
It is not a cynical superhero take. It is not.
But the main character doesn't feel like is cynical. Like, he really does believe in himself and being a good person.
I will say, I know this is not like this is not anime, but Invincible is not. Invincible is not a cynical superhero take. It is a different look at like a more realistic superhero world where like there are, because the reality of it is this: if superpowers existed, there are going to be people who abuse it, but there are also going to be people who don't, and that, like, because that's just how people are. Some people suck, some people don't, and that's what's interesting in Invincible, because it is a generic superhero world, and then you just kind of get to look at the everything, and it ends up not really being about superheroes. I'll tell you that. It's more about like a much bigger, broader spectrum of like who Mark is and the people around him, and I highly recommend sticking with
enjoying it.
Like, also, J.K. Simmons.
I'm enjoying the show.
J.K. Simmons.
It's just that like this whole like, what if Superman
Simmons.
But an asshole, but like
and
has
his
like
mustache.
Yeah, Omni-Man is an interesting character, though. They haven't really given many indications to his motivations yet.
We'll get there. It's coming. Yeah, you'll have it before the end of the season.
Yeah, no, but I'm enjoying the show so far. It's just I'm kind of like, it's like, oh, okay, more superhero murders. Okay,
Aaron, what's your third wish?
Yeah, what's your third wish?
Sorry to cut you off, Sharif. I just wanted to put it on Aaron.
No. I was gonna ask Aaron what's his third wish anyway.
This is a long episode. We're at 1:30 already.
It's all right. It's all right. We'll get through this together, guys. Okay, so this one's hard because like I have two that both seem kind of prevalent, and I'm not sure which one to go with. I'll kind of lay them both out very quickly, very briefly. First one is I don't like the anime protagonist having like this secret power that just needed to be unlocked, and then they can be like the Ubermensch. like they just have this like power that like erupts out of them like in a desperate situation, and then like all the problems are solved for that foreseeable future, and then the rest of the show just becomes about them controlling that secret power.
Mm-hmm.
That gets old really quickly because it cuts the tension like a fucking knife. Ichigo's hollow form, the Ninetales Fox in Naruto, even Gon, I think, has one that I haven't gotten to yet.
No.
He doesn't he become like a buff scary boy, like, because he's just like, you killed my friend, now I shall become the most powerful. I haven't gotten there yet, but like, I'm worried that's going.
There's a lot that goes into that moment.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
What I'll tell you is this.
I'm happy.
Nen is one of the most well-developed shonen power systems.
Yeah, I pay attention rules. To how Nen works. I do love, is it Kurapika, the blonde-haired kid?
Yep.
Yeah.
I love his arc. He's such an interesting character. Like, yeah, like, he basically can't be at full power unless he's fighting a very specific person.
One of 10 people.
Yes. And he's so OP, but, like, it's restricted to those 10 people, so it's fine.
Yep. It has very specific rules.
And then my other one is I very much dislike queer coding in anime, because the way they do it seems very harsh and mean-spirited most of the time. Like, sometimes it's not as bad, but like in My Hero, you have one of the protagonists of Class 1A who is queer coded, but it is pretty over the top, so it can still be kind of a harmful stereotype. Now, that's the French kid.
Is he that, or is he French?
he's not gay. He's French.
There's the difference.
There's a difference.
It is not but, queer to Sparkle.
Naval Laser Guy.
Yeah, Naval Laser Guy. He's
I like him.
Yeah, he's a likable character, and like he gets to have an arc, but he is pretty wildly over the top. But here's an example of something I would consider kind of like gating into weird, creepy territory. Because I just watched Hunter Hunter, the first example that comes to mind is literally
Hisoka.
Yeah. Okay. I like Hisoka. Hisoka's a cool and interesting character.
Yeah, Hisoka is quite sexual.
The sexualization and like very queer code for one, like he's not flamboyant as a person, but his like overbearingly creepy like hyper focus on Gon, and it's because of power. Like, they try and establish that well, but it's the way they frame that, like,
no,
very sexual. He literally says, I'm so turned on by this.
Like, no, he is that's not a joke. Like, he is quite sexual. He is,
he's got like a rainbow aura. His like Nen is coded pink. He's very queer coded. It's coded, right? And this isn't a problem in just anime. This kind of like Disney's a big example of queer coding your villains.
Right? I agree with it being a problem in anime. I disagree with Hisoka. Because Hisoka's also a clown. Like, he is supposed to be a creepy, like, rape clown.
Yes, but that's what it makes it weird. It's like...
We're gonna definitely need to have this Hunter Hunter.
Oh, dude, as soon as Aaron says he finishes it, it's gonna happen.
But I will say, like, that's probably the first thing that came to mind just because I just finished watching it. But it is pretty notorious throughout anime. So I think I'll pick that one, just because I find it stronger than the first one. Because, like, sometimes the unlocking the secret power can be cool, like, I guess, and then it gives it a whole, like,
there can be purpose power behind that. The queer coding one is a little less, okay. The other thing I'm gonna all LGBTQ+ creators out there, I talk to Sage about this all the time, your character's arc and persona doesn't have to be that they're gay. They can just be gay.
No, of course. Their sexualization is their character.
I mean,
like, it depends on how you frame it, right?
Yeah. It really just depends. Oh, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No. I was gonna say, like, in that respect, like, if you are making your character arc about their sexuality, I think that does have purpose, because a lot of people who are in that community, that's a part of their lives that was an arc for them. Like, they had to accept themselves as gay. They had to come out as gay. They had to come out as trans. And so that whole process is an arc in and of itself. And the end goal is literally just them fitting into their sexuality and their So, like, in that regard, like, I kind of understand why LGBTQ creators do make their character traits kind of revolve around that, because they, a lot of people in that community, they don't get a choice, because, like, they, like, because they have to fight for acceptance, they have to fight to be that person in the world, if that becomes their whole being, right? Like, it's a part of them. It's such a large part of them. So I kind of get that. I do get what you're saying, though. But yeah, like, I...
Yeah,
queer coding in anime is pretty notorious.
Yeah, it's, I wanted to hear what Sharif's point was, and then I have one more thought.
No, I was just gonna say, it. I mean, it's one of those things where, like, I feel like it's. I feel like as the years go on, it's becoming more and more accepted. It's always been a thing in comic books, especially like with Captain Marvel. If you guys don't read the comics, she is lesbian. I mean, it's not one of those things where they just come out and tell you, but when you read, you're like, oh, you just get it by picking up on the context of things. You know what I mean? And it's like that with a lot of characters in comic books, and it's starting to like make its way towards like some of the, like, you know, toward like more media and stuff like that. So I feel like it's one of those things, it's becoming more accepted as time. But I get what Scott was saying. It was like, don't, if your character has a story to tell, then tell the story. Don't let the story just be because they are this one thing. I think that's what you were getting at, right?
Yeah, and that works with like anything. Like, you know, it's similar to the trope like that I eliminated in my anime verse about being a single note character. Like, I'm just angry. I'm just gay. Like, it's you're pinholing somebody into like one aspect. I remember several years ago, I had somebody try to say that, like, I didn't have, like, enough they attempted to say I didn't have a lot of diversity in my cast in D&D games, and I will admit it, that I tend to use more male characters, and it's because I don't like to voice characters that I can't do well, so I don't do a ton of female characters, but, like, they tried to say there was no diversity, and what was funny is in that very, like, session that we were playing, they had, unbeknownst to them, because they couldn't see him, they didn't interact with this person very well, but they had met a black gay character. Like, he wears a mask, he has this, like, techno helmet that he uses because he's a scientist, and he can't fight without it. That's part of his, like, character quirk, is that he's super intelligent, and he's in good shape, but he's, like, not very dexterous, or he's very clumsy. So he built this helmet to help him live his dreams of being an adventurer. But he also happens to be, like, a gay character. Like, it's just not a big thing for me, but he is. He's supposed to be, like, a cowboy archetype, so when he goes in, he hits on the guy that's, like, at the bar, instead of, like, the girl who's the waitress, and it's just a funny, like, dynamic. And none of them notice that.
Yeah.
I do want to give examples, because I don't feel like... Because I feel like I can be misunderstood. Your character does not have to be gay or queer to be queer-coded. That's the point. The point of queer coding isn't to assume that a character is gay necessarily, but to give them stereotypes associated with the idea of being queer. And a lot of that goes back to, like in America, a lot of that goes back to the Hays Code. You cannot have certain traits unless you were a bad guy.
Yeah.
Because being gay is bad. That's the idea that they wanted to communicate without outwardly saying it. And that's my point.
Yeah.
They do that a lot in anime. Like, one example.
Yeah, the flamboyant character in anime.
Like, a bad gay character in anime is Pretty Pretty Prisoner. And listen, Pretty Pretty Prisoner is cool and all.
He's,
like,
don't get me wrong.
He's a cool dude.
I love like, him.
But the like, hyper rapey shit, like, that they put in, that's queer coding. And it's kind of dangerous because, like, that is an actual harmful stereotype that's followed the gay community around, is that they're. They like assault other men, and they force other men to be gay and rape men. And an even worse one is that the association with being pedophilic to being gay.
Yeah,
like all gay men are pedophilic is a harmful trope that's often used. So like Pretty Pretty Prisoner doesn't like kids, but Hisuka, he's got some gross sexual aggression towards Gon, and I'm not enjoying it.
He just wants him to get a little stronger, and then he can kill him.
I know.
It's so creepy.
He's a creep. Like, he's a fun character that I enjoy. There
is a fantastic bit of like more of like human growth in Togashiro, and of like development with like the accepting of like LGBTQ plus like people in Hunter x Hunter later on. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait till you get there. Yeah. You have to watch the whole series, and then I will explain it to you then, because I want to see if you notice it naturally in the show. It's an arc. There's an entire arc about a specific character who is, the spoiler, they are a trans person, and I want to see whether or not you figure it out, because I noticed it immediately what was happening, and I looked it up, and I fell deep down in this rabbit hole and found it super interesting as to what was going on there. So, I get. We have two more things. I have one.
No, we.
That was you. Both you and Sharif have one left.
Damn. This is hard. I don't like this game. you have mind. Yours. Yeah, you go. You go, and I'll go last.
Yeah. I'm gonna just say this right now. Tsundere's, get rid of all of them. Off the map. I want them Thanos snapped. I want them gone. It's the most aggravating. I don't know about you guys. I don't know about you guys, but like when I'm watching my shows, right? And I'm chilling. I'm sitting out maxing. Well, hold on, I can't say that. when I'm chilling, bro. Like a lot of anime is super, especially with like isekai, because isekai is such a big thing right now. Literally, the main character is a blank slate because you insert yourself in main character shoes. So, and that's pretty much like with most anime, but like you got the big ones, like you got the Sakuras, you got the Okami-sans, there's a lot, you've got the Chitoges. Don't get me started on the Chitoges, but how do you love a person that is literally going to destroy you one moment? And then next moment, they're like, here's a cupcake. It's infuriating. I feel like it's such a tried. I feel like it's so played out. Tsundere's are so played out to the point where I feel like there's nothing inventive or new that they can do with the archetype anymore. And this, I'm done. I'm sick of it. I can't. They don't even explain why they are the way they are. They just, they're just like, I'm just mean. And then sometimes I love you. I'm a Sour Patch Kid, you know? Like, I'm done with it.
Which is awful, because, like, as funny as it is to, like, observe that, is like, isn't this, like, exactly how abusive relationships work in the real world? Like, they'll, like,
exactly.
The next baby be like, I'm so sorry, I love you, baby. Like, like, it's literally an abusive relationship that you're creating for your characters, and you're telling us to accept it. Ship that shit.
Exactly. And I don't know if other people do this, but like I'll be like, yo, if I put myself in that person's shoes, I'm not taking that. but then it's like, but it's a whole thing, man. It's a whole thing. Tsundere's, just get rid of them. Just get rid of them.
Oh my god, you know what
I would not miss them.
Have you guys ever seen that like that reality dating comedy show where the whole point is that they like. They try to see how well the couples know each other. And they'll have like three women, and the guy has to like guess which one is his fiance just by like the statement that's made.
Yep.
We should do that with like anime relationships that we don't feel like make any sense. Like Naruto, name one thing you like about Hinata that doesn't revolve around her looks.
Oh, that's amazing.
But no, tsundere's are the worst, bro. Like, would you, like, no one in this Discord call or in the chat would actually date a tsundere. If you would, I want to see it in the chat. I want screenshots.
Show me receipts.
I want receipts.
I'm very lonely and I have, like, no friends within a 100-mile radius, so I'd consider it.
That's just gonna get himself like a wife that just like abuses him like on stream, but he gets a cookie.
I've hit the point of like antisocial shut-in that I two people who were like probably like closer to our age demographic, these two ladies like stumped me. and they wanted to like pet Coda, and all I could do was like be like, "Yep, he's a puppy. He's a puppy." Like, I didn't know how to people. I, like, lost it. I was like, what do I normally do? Like, where's the camera? I need to look at the camera and be like, what up, chat? Yeah, this is Cody. He's a puppy. He's my puppy dog. He's an American Bulldog. He's real cool. I couldn't do it. I couldn't communicate. I shut down. It's a sad life I live.
It's bad advice, but from now on, you just every person you interact with is now your webcam. So, like, you have to, like, talk to people like they're your webcam.
Can I help you, Sage?
Are you still podcasting?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Okay, bye, Sage. Sage just creeped in the room.
Hi, Sage.
He's just, like, looking
Sage,
at me.
Sage, come back.
And it's scary.
Yeah, no, man.
He's got his hood up and stuff. It's scary.
No, Sundere is the worst. You would never date a Sundere. And I'm talking about girls and guys. I'm talking about both ends of the spectrum.
Yep.
Like, you would not date someone that radical. Like, you would be done. You'd be done.
I'm, like, so deep in my head right now trying to... Get rid of him. I'm, like, so deep in the back of my brain trying to, like, come up with, like, a salient thought on, like, what my last wish is. And I think this is what I'm gonna go with. This is going to be a hard one, and it's going to take me a minute to articulate this properly. I no longer want the mysterious, undeveloped third act villain. In Naruto, I think we've all finished Naruto.
Yep.
The final boss being whatever the fuck Moon Lady, where she has no build-up, no relevance. Is it Kaguya? She doesn't exist in the rest of the story, the rest of the continuity, and yet she's the final bad guy. When we had Madara, who's been very well built up, like, we have physically seen him and heard about him since very early on, like, hundreds of chapters, and making him the bad guy fits. I don't like that. Enter a third party individual. I want a character that's built up.
Yeah, I feel you on that. Like, Kaguya does it. I'm trying to think who else does it. What other anime does that? There's a lot. That
Bleach does it.
Sword Art Online does it. Sword Art Online does it.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, for people who like Sword Art Online, sorry. We kind of bagging on you. Show.
No, you don't get a say.
So I don't know what you're talking about. Stands. Sword Art Online is a fantastic 13 episode anime. Just like Supernatural is one of the best 5-season CW shows you can ever watch.
Okay, so Sword Art Online is a hentai that he just didn't get the rights to do it as a hentai, so he just had to make it a regular anime. Like, it's a harem.
It makes
it's a
me...
harem with an overpowered protagonist.
Dude, I that's one of the things that makes me sad, is because I liked the first 13 episodes, because I like how it genuinely, like, looks at being in a game. I like the moments where it shows, like, an accurate gamified world and stuff. I don't mind, like, him and Asuna, like, falling in love and, like, clinging to each other, because they're in a very scary situation. They are just teenagers. They are both kind of isolated in their own right, and they find... friendship and comfort there. Like, that's cool. I like all this build up. And then, like, next season, they're like,
we don't talk about season 2.
It's just like more girls. More girls. It's dumb. It doesn't make any sense. Anyway,
but also one of the girls is his sister, just so we're clear about what's happening in this anime.
Is it, and that's the thing. I think it's his biological sister, unlike most anime where it's
big
a cousin.
Biological sister. Yeah, that's
Japan has different because in Japan a lot of the time it's actually like their fourth cousin or something, and they just still call each other cousins, which is normally somebody you wouldn't know in real life. They're so distant.
Yeah, like it's not like there's a certain level of disconnect. Yeah, there's a certain level of disconnect people can even make when it's like, this is my stepsister, which is like the usual excuse, right? Like, there's a certain disconnect in the audience that, like, it'll allow for it to be like, okay, yeah, okay, this checks out. They're like doing math in their head, like, is that, there's no blood, right? Yeah, okay, we're good, we're solid. But like, yeah, what the fuck is Sword Art Online, man? Jesus Christ. And by all intents and purposes, she should hate him because, like, he sucks in the real world. He's just. By the way, if you want like a way more accurate reading of the characters in Sword Art Online, Sword Art Online Abridged understands Sword Art Online better than Sword Art Online. Like, it understands who these characters are. It's perfect.
Yeah, I don't know. I still like the first, like, 13 episodes. I like the actual Sword Art arc, which is only the one. It's the only one. I've watched Abridged. I thought it was fine. I thought it was passable. I don't think it's anywhere near as funny as Yu-Gi-Oh! Or DBZA. Though nothing is as funny as DBZA. Those guys are top tier.
That's a hard one to beat.
Yeah, so do you guys have any examples of, like, bad third arc villains besides, like, really Bleach and Naruto?
Yeah, I'm really trying to think. Those are kind of some of the top tier ones.
Bleach is a bad offender.
Do you guys have, like, a good example of, like, a villain that swoops in kind of last minute?
It's very common. I just can't think of an exact example.
Yeah. So, like, I as a villain that I think is a very good, he's not the final villain, but I think apparently it's Togashiro Day. I'm just gonna go to Yu Yu Hakusho and Hunter x Hunter forever. A very good villain that I think comes in kind of like out of nowhere. You're like not expecting him to be the next bad guy. I think it's Shisui, who is the first spirit detective in Yu Yu Hakusho, and you know nothing about Shisui, but you do know, it's funny because they tried and do this in Bleach, and I don't think it works as well. You do know that Yusuke is not the first spirit detective. You know that there was someone before him. You know that Yusuke, even as we see him become a badass, is considered kind of a scrub by Koenma compared to the initial spirit detective. And then he becomes the big bad in the arc right after the tournament, which is when Yusuke is, like, unfucking touchable in our eyes, right? Like, they bring them back down to, like, Earth so hard with the psychics in the game and then setting up the next arc. And Shisui's a cool character. Like, he has unique motivations. He sees humanity as the villain because he's seen what we do to each other. Yeah. So it's cool because he's always in the background.
That's definitely really good.
Just like Thanos. Thanos was well developed in the MCU. You know, you watch the seeds of his army and his like meddlings affect all these different people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are good examples. I don't like it when it is just and suddenly new bad guy and they're scary.
I am now the final boss.
God damn, it's all I can think of is Naruto. I just remember reading, because I had to read the manga. I was like, Shippuden's going to take forever to catch up. Mm-hmm. So I just started reading. I was like blowing through the manga.
Yeah, Yusuke is like, the third detective.
I was like, Tobi is Obito. Okay. Way more interesting, because at least at some point they did the Kakashi story. I kind of wish they used the Kakashi story a little more and kind of like, in the original Naruto, gave focused a little more on like why Kakashi has the Sharingan. They don't like bring it up as much as I would thought they would.
I think it's because in the manga it was like a short run thing they did at some point called the Kakashi Chronicles.
And like it ended up being such an important part of the story. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because the artist didn't really or the author didn't really think of it until later, and he was like, "Oh, that would be cool." But like then it's not Tobi. It's Madara who's actually behind it all. You're like, oh, okay, it was Madara. I thought you were dead, bro. And like, no, it's Madara, bro.
Man.
All right, bro. And then, no, I can't be Madara. It's fucking God.
Yep.
It's God.
For shenanigans and reasons. But not to cut you guys off too much, but we are approaching that 2-hour mark, and I think that's just a little long in the tooth. So we're going to start closing up. We had a whole bunch of anime genie wishes. I think the genie is satisfied, and these strange new worlds are created.
Very hyper specific genie too. Like we're dying on this island. Like we're not
we don't get to enjoy the fruits of this labor.
No. Why this genie ended up here is beyond me.
No, but what if we do? What if like that's all he gives us? Like as he leaves, he just gives us an infinite supply of like new anime DVDs and like a just single Blu-ray player that will never like break, and then we just live off of the coconuts that aren't Walter because he's our friend, and then this Blu-ray collection. Oh,
I have to learn to make fish and sushi.
Yep. This is our world now. Anyway, guys, if you didn't already know, this has been the Super Otaku Show. As always, I'm joined by my Roman half, Aaron, the shooting star sheriff himself, Sharif, and I am Bear. This is Roman Bear, and we stream this show every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then it goes up on podcast services around the globe, so you can go check them out at your convenience. And we're also on YouTube at Roman Bear Streams on YouTube. So if you want to watch the back catalog and see our mediocre faces, you can go do it there. But anyway, guys, until next time, keep watching anime, avoid the tsunderes, and so long.
Please.